murky result.
The Marketplace Morning Report is produced in association with the University of Southern California.
From American Public Media in Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Four down, 9,000 to go. That's cases against Merck over the painkiller Vioxx. Yesterday, a jury in New Jersey said the drug company was liable for one man's heart attack, but a second man's heart, not a second man's heart problems. The jury awarded one plaintiff $4.5 million. The other got just $45. Before this trial, Merck had won one case, lost $250 million in another, and drawn a mistrial. Sorry, kids, some folks in Congress want to get rid of the candy and soda machines in your school hallway. Today, they'll introduce a bill that would pretty much ban the sale of junk food in public schools. The government tried to do this in the 80s, but the Cokes and Pepsis of the world sued and won. Sarah Gardner tells us what's different this time.
As child obesity rates escalate, calls to close the so-called school nutrition loophole have gotten louder. The U.S. Department of Agriculture can issue nutrition standards for the government's school breakfast and hot lunch programs, but not for all the other food that's sold on campus. Margot Wutan is at the Center for Science in the Public Interest.
There is a lot of junk food sold in schools these days, in the a la carte line, out of vending machines, school stores.
The legislation would expand the government's definition of junk food and prohibit most sales on campus. Groups like the National PTA and the American Diabetes Association support the restrictions, but they'll likely be opposed, and not just by snack and soda merchants. Many high schools depend on junk food to help fund extracurricular activities, and principals say that's a decision for school boards, not Congress. I'm Sarah Gardner for Marketplace.
While we're on the subject of candy, someone's got a thing for Fannie Mae, the Chicago-based chocolate company. Yesterday, 1-800-Flowers paid $85 million for it. So you arrive at your hotel in New York City and stroll up to the front desk. You tap the little bell. Ding. Nothing. Ding. No one comes because they're on strike. Could happen if union hotel workers and the city's hotels can't reach a deal before June. They're meeting today, and other cities are watching closely. Ashley Milne-Tight reports.
Hotel executives and unionized workers in cities like Honolulu, Chicago, Boston, and Los Angeles are following the New York negotiations closely. In the next few months, their labor agreements are also set to expire. New York union spokesman John Terciano says key issues include
job security, addressing the condo conversion crisis. We're looking for language which would stop certain hotels from repeated violations of the contract.
Hilton Hotels has so far refused to bargain with the union. Terciano says if a strike were to take place, it would probably just hit Hilton's six properties. Jeff Weinstein of Hotels Magazine says the chain is ready.
They will hire temporary work, and then they'll call on employees from around the country to come in. So a big company like Hilton has a lot of resources.
Hilton manages around 5,000 hotel rooms in New York. I'm Ashley Milne-Tight for Marketplace.
Wall Street did a lot of buying for the second straight day. The Dow gained 35 points to 11,239. The NASDAQ was up 14 to 2359. And the S&P 500 climbed 5. Oil is still climbing, around $68 a barrel today. This is Marketplace. The Masters tees off today at Augusta National in Georgia. It's one of golf's premier events, but Augusta's been under some pressure in recent years. And this time around, the tournament's corporate sponsors are too. Cheryl Glazer explains.
Augusta National Golf Club's been hosting the Masters since the early 1930s, but the private club still does not admit women as members. So a shareholder resolution's been filed against ExxonMobil, one of the sponsors at this year's Masters.
The resolution asks management to give stockholders a report on the money they are spending at venues that discriminate against women.
Martha Burke is a longtime ExxonMobil stockholder and works for the National Council of Women's Organizations. This isn't the first time Burke has taken on Augusta, but now she's focusing her attention on the Masters corporate sponsors. Burke says progress is slow, but she points out that two former corporate sponsors, Citigroup and Coca-Cola, didn't sign on again this year. I'm Cheryl Glazer for Marketplace.
Which comes to you from American Public Media.
Marketplace Morning Report is supported by Microsoft Dynamics. Business solutions for CRM, supply chain, and financial management. Microsoft.com/Microsoft Dynamics. And by Mellon Financial Corporation. Helping financially successful individuals and families protect and maximize their assets through the practice of wealth management. Mellon.com.
This is Marketplace. I'm Scott Jagow. Last week, when Chris Farrell joined us, we talked about immigration. Chris's take was the lack of skilled immigrants coming into this country might be an even bigger problem than undocumented workers. Boy, did the emails pour in. So he's back, and we thought we'd talk a little more about this hot topic. Chris, any second thoughts about saying we should open the doors to more foreign workers?
My only second thought is, or really my third thought is, let's do it now. My colleague at Businessweek, Mike Mandel, did a calculation several weeks ago, and he estimated that skilled immigrants brought in between $50 billion and $200 billion a year in human capital, in their knowledge, their skill, their wealth, and the spending that they bring to this economy. And so my sense has even grown stronger.
But people often make the argument that immigration, legal and illegal, costs the U.S. billions of dollars. What do you say to that?
See, I think there are two parts of that equation. One is on the side of crime. One's on the side of the economy. There's a paper, it's called On Immigration and Crime. It's by Ramiro Martinez and Matthew Lee, where you look in areas where first-generation immigrants are heavily concentrated. They're 45% less likely to commit violence than third-generation Americans. Take a look at California. You know, California's had a pretty big wave of immigration since 1980. But your total crime is down about half. The same thing is true across the country. If you compare border cities to a comparable city that is not a border city, the border city has lower crime rates. And there's a certain logic once you think about it, which is that people come to this country to work, to have a job. And they really don't want to be caught by the police and sent back. So immigration is one of the factors that has actually brought about a decline in the United States over the past two decades.
And how does that relate to the economy, or what is the economic component?
The charge that immigrants are costing the taxpayer a lot of money in terms of police and justice, the charge is unfair. The other thing is the costs of food stamps, or welfare, or hospital, school system. We do have a problem. There is a cost, but it is a concentrated cost. And here's how I would think about it. In the border states, in the border cities, if you do look at the social services like hospitals and schools, they are burdened. As a society, as an economy, if you think of what has been going on in this economy over the past three decades, we have all benefited from these immigrants. It's a classic issue of free trade. The society, the economy benefits as a whole, but certain sectors end up absorbing a disproportionate amount of the cost. And we should be focusing on that.
All right, Chris, thanks for your thoughts. I'll make some more room in the email inbox.
I'd love to hear what people are saying. Thanks a lot.
Chris Farrell is economics editor for our weekend program, Marketplace Money. And that email address is letters@marketplace.org. In Los Angeles, I'm Scott Jagow. Thanks for tuning in and have a great day.
American Public Media.
Money Talks.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.